Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, we'll take a listener's question of concern about the old landscaping timbers she found at her new house to issue a stern warning about old railroad ties. Wait till you hear what we found out about the legality of those little beasts. In the meantime, though, we're taking a beastly number of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Nyla, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. I just had a quick question. My mom, she's into vegetable gardening a lot, and I'm starting my own vegetable gardening myself. And there's an issue that has come up with white grubs.
Okay.
The issue is, I mean, they're eating away at our plants. And my mom's plants, and she's wondering, is there a way to get rid of them that's, you know, natural and organic? And
absolutely.
From what I looked up something called nematodes.
Yes.
I think I'm pronouncing it correctly.
Yep.
Is that the way to go, or what are your thoughts?
Could be. Now, where are you?
Alexandria, Virginia.
Oh, very good. Just outside of Washington, D.C.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a nice area. I really like the old town, Alexandria.
Yeah, it is really nice.
So you or your mom, I've lost track of who's grubby here, you've turned over your soil and you've seen these white crescent-shaped grubs living in the soil.
Yes, a lot of them.
A lot of them. Okay. So what's happening, just so you understand the life cycle, in the summertime, Japanese beetles, Asiatic beetles, which are the same but they feed at night, rose chafer beetles, and a couple of other varieties of what are called scarab beetles, they're out eating your plants. And then the females, once they mate, they look for moist, open places of ground to lay their eggs. Japanese beetles tend to only do it in poor areas of turf. But the other scarab beetles are known for laying their eggs in garden beds. So, for instance, as we go into this season, one thing you want to do to prevent this is to have a nice mulch of shredded leaves or pine straw on the surface to deter the egg laying. And oddly enough, don't leave any lights on at night if you can near the garden, because that attracts the Asiatic beetle. So you can have these grubs in your soil without ever having seen the adults, because the Asiatics feed at night. So what you want to do now is you want to find a good source of beneficial nematodes. These are tiny microscopic creatures. You literally buy them by the millions. They come packed in typically a little sponge that's sealed inside aluminum foil or something like that. And in one thing like the size of a Dobe pad for like scrubbing your dishes, there could be 50 million beneficial nematodes inside. Typically, you mail order them. If you buy them at a hip garden center, you want to check the expiration date because these are living creatures. And that's one of the reasons why people generally mail order them, to make sure they get them really nice and fresh. You want to wait till the soil's a little bit warmer. They can't be very active in cold soil. Plus, the grubs go down way deep below the frost line for the winter. And with the hellish winter you had, it's going to take them a little while to move up into the region where the nematodes can really get at them. So I'd say right around the time that typically I put my tomatoes in the ground, right around May 15th, is when you want to be prepared. You want to have your nematodes in hand. And what you want to do is wait till the sun goes down, and you'll get directions with them. All you do is open up the package, drop the sponge into a watering can. Now, you don't want to use city water. You don't want to use water with chlorine or fluoride or anything in it. You want to do purified water. You want to use distilled water or rainwater, spring water, something like that. And you'll drop the sponge in, and the nematodes will spill over into the water. And then just as the sun is going down, hopefully into a moist garden, a garden that you've kind of wet down or it's right after a rain. And then you will just water these creatures into the surface of the soil. And because it's now the sun has gone down, but the soil is warm, they won't be cooked by the sun, but they'll be able to move down very quickly. And they need it to be moist because that helps them move down. And so you never want to do it first thing in the morning, for instance. You never want to do it in the heat of the day. You want to do it just as the sun is going down. So they have all the time in the world to get down there. And then the nematodes that have been bred for this purpose, the grub-eating nematodes, actually seeks them out. They travel through the earth and look for grubs. And they don't harm earthworms or anything else. They just bore into the grubs and kill them. It should be very satisfying if you've seen a lot of these things.
Okay, this is really useful. Thank you so much.
Oh, and it'll be tons of fun. You'll just think of these little guys burrowing into your grubs and getting even.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. All right.
Take care. Good luck.
You too. Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Ed, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call, and thanks for all the great advice over the years.
Well, thank you for making it, Ed. Where are you, man?
I'm in Utica, Michigan, which is north of Detroit. What I'm not having a lot of fun with these days is I've got the luxury of having a greenhouse that I built last year. So I've got all my springtime crops in there, my kohlrabi, my spinach, yada, yada. And lo and behold, I started getting mushrooms in my spinach. I recognize them as cup mushrooms, and I'm picking them out and composting them. But the act of picking them out, of course, is spreading them. So I feel like the little Dutch boy with my finger in the dike, and I'm just not holding the water back. Every day there's more. Any suggestions on how to get rid of them?
Now, you're calling them cup mushrooms. Do they look like the white button mushrooms that are raised commercially?
No. They're like flipped upside down. They're very viscous. They're small. If I let them grow bigger, I'm sure they would. I did not do a spore sample on them. I'm not willing to risk eating any of these.
No. Don't eat the mushrooms, Ed. Don't eat the mushrooms, you know. Now, where did you get your soil?
From a local big box store, basically.
Really?
Well, it's compost. It's peat. It's topsoil. It's a mixture that I did. I took totes and made raised beds out of totes inside of my greenhouse because it's small.
Right.
That way I can move them around, too.
And so you bought bags of
peat moss, compost, topsoil, and lovely little volcanic glass.
Oh, perlite or vermiculite. One or the other, right? So you kind of tried to make your own potting soil. First of all, is there any chance that the compost was actually mushroom soil?
Yes, it was.
Oh,
that's
mystery solved, Edsky, you know. Now, but it is unusual. Spent mushroom soil is a very common product, especially here in Pennsylvania, being sold to people for use in their gardens. But the growers, the mushroom growers, as the soil leaves the mushroom farms, they'll either steam it, which is what you want to get to kill the spores, or some people who are growing real commercial mushrooms and want to take the short take, they'll spray it with formaldehyde so it doesn't sprout mushrooms. But it sounds like you got mushroom soil with active spores. Plus, you used peat moss in the mix. Did you do anything to negate the acidic effects of the peat moss?
Yeah, I would ask.
Yeah, see, normally I would tell you to taste your soil, but you're scared of the mushrooms, and I don't blame you for that. You don't want to be getting any spores.
I'm running 7 on pH.
You're running 7, and yet you're getting mushrooms. Huh. That is highly unusual. All I can tell you is that you got mushroom soil that still had mushrooms in it, and you're ready to put all these crops outside now. Do you have vegetable starts in the greenhouse, things like tomatoes and peppers getting ready for the season?
Absolutely. I'm loving them every day.
And you have mushrooms amongst those as well?
No, only with the spinach, which means it probably came out of one particular bag.
Oh, okay. And how does the spinach look and taste?
Delicious and great.
Okay. Well, you know, the spinach is a springtime crop anyway. So when you're done harvesting that, I would take that soil mix and I would take it outside and pile it up. I don't know if you have other material, if you have shredded fall leaves, but I would compost it. I would just let it sit outside in a pile for the summer. And if you see spores coming up, see if there's some way you can steam it. I mean, even something like pouring boiling water over it. But, you know, I know they sell these little machines to, like, steam your clothing and your draperies with. If you could steam it, you would get rid of the mushrooms. But I think that if you just pile that up outside this summer, it'll be good to use again in the fall. And weirdly enough, you got a bag of mushroom soil that never got decontaminated after it left the mushroom farm.
So if I take it out after they can harvest the spinach and just make sure I'm not getting any of the mushrooms and wash them good, and then if I was to put it with this year's compost, that would work then?
Absolutely. And get it into the center of the pile where it'll heat up.
Thanks, Mike.
All right. Good luck, Ed. What a strange thing to have happened. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will reveal everything you need to know to have a chemical-free lawn at the Bryn Mawr Presbyterian Church on Wednesday, May 20th at 7 p.m. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with bad news about old timbers and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by Burpee, celebrating their 139th year of providing treasured heirloom varieties, hardworking hybrids, fruits of all kinds, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. Information at burpee.com. And the Espoma Company, makers of Biotone Starter Plus for new transplants, full of beneficial microbes and mycorrhiza for deeper roots and stronger plants. Espoma, a natural in the garden since
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, you move into a new house, but there are old landscape timbers in the landscape, in the garden, surrounding beds. What's the worst case scenario? We'll tell you. And it's even worse than you thought. After a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Mary, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Good morning, Mike McGrath.
Hello, Mary. How are you?
Well, I'm concerned about if there's a possibility if I can grow vegetables in a garden, small apartment garden, that only gets half an hour of sunlight, about 5 o'clock every day.
Oof, that's tough. Where are you, Mary?
I'm in Ventura, California. It's right next to Malibu.
Oh, the Ventura Highway.
We're in a pretty bad drought situation here.
I know that. And how can you not have sun? California is sunshine, you know?
Well, it's in the shade of the building. It's very small. It's only like 6 feet by 2.
And what else is around it? Because as you say, the water situation in Southern California is way past dire. and people
rubber
are changing.
Rubber plants hardly need any water at all, so I've got them and something called Mexican sage.
So it sounds like you've actually found something that's going to grow in that spot. So why do you want to change it out?
I would love some fresh vegetables. Nothing can beat real tomatoes.
Mmm, boy, you're asking a lot. What I would suggest if you lived almost anywhere else is to find a community garden.
Oh, yeah. There is one near here.
Okay. And I guess they're recycling water. I guess they're taking care of their own water needs.
I don't know how they're doing it, but it's through the local government.
Okay, good. Well, that's your answer, is you want to go over there.
Okay.
You want to find out what it takes to get a plot in the garden. And, you know, your growing season is different from ours, so, you know,
it's
kind
of continuous.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, work with their water conservation rules, and really tomatoes have to be grown outside, and to get good tomatoes, to get good healthy fruits, they need 6 to 8 hours of sun a day.
6 to 8 hours. Okay,
yeah, but, I mean, you're in an area that can get very hot in the summer, so your tomatoes in a community garden might need some afternoon shade. The ideal situation would be for them to get 6 or 8 hours in the morning and then to be shaded after that. So do you have a lot of time to garden, or are you working around a job?
No, I'm going to Ventura College here.
Okay. Because it wouldn't be out of line that if a heat wave comes through, you know, one of your classic nasty summer heat waves, that you just get a beach umbrella. And you have it at the garden. And after around noon, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, on the days you can, just go over there and shade your plants with the beach umbrella, which would prevent them from broiling in the sun. And also help conserve the water underneath.
Wow, you've got some wonderful ideas.
That's why I get the big money, Mayor.
And I hardly ever use umbrellas here. I just use a raincoat because our rain's always real light. So I can use my umbrellas in the garden.
That's your answer. Get a spot in this community garden. Work with the other gardeners. Like you say, you can install these tomato plants almost any time of the year. There's a guy out on the West Coast named Scott Daig who does a thing called Tomato Mania.
Tomato Mania.
And
okay.
Scott and his partner Sam, they're dear friends of mine. They breed out like 300 different varieties. And they live in Pasadena, so they understand the Southern California climate. And they have varieties that are really good for California. Yeah, but even if you could get stuff to grow in that little light, it's not healthy. It concentrates nitrites from the soil. But get a spot in the community garden, provide some afternoon shade, make sure you grow varieties that are very heat tolerant, and you'll have more tomatoes than you know what to do with, and it'll be a great way to meet and interact with other gardeners.
Oh, yeah, that might be fun. Didn't think of that.
It's always fun. The best way to learn is from a fellow gardener.
Wow, well, you're full of answers. How did you get so thoroughly educated in this?
I met a beautiful woman at a party who only wanted somebody who could grow raspberries for.
Oh, that's sweet.
All right, Mayor?
Okay, thanks a lot, Mr. McGrath.
Good luck to you.
I'll be listening to your show at 5 a.m. out here.
I know. They got us on awful early, and thank you for that.
Oh, thank you very much. I'll set my alarm.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Fred, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
I am just ducky today. Fred, how are you, sir?
I'm very well, thank you.
And where is Fred very well?
I am in East Brunswick, New Jersey.
The Garden State. What can we do for Fred in Jersey?
Hey, Mike, I have a little situation with my garden last year. I was growing my zucchini plants. They were blooming, the leaves were gigantic, beautiful, I was getting nice flowers, and I was getting zero fruit. And then I had noticed that my lower section of the plant, the root, the actual stem coming out of the ground, was deteriorating. It was starting to rot away. They looked beautiful, but they bared no fruit whatsoever.
Okay, so zucchini. People think of zucchini as just abundance times 10. And that is what happens later in the season. But for some strange reason that certainly is poorly understood by me, when a zucchini plant starts producing flowers, it only produces male flowers. It's like the worst high school dance ever. It's like it's like 600 guys and there's no girls. So the bees can come in. Bees, squash bees. That there is a native bee known as the squash bee that just lives for zucchini and other summer and winter squash. And they'll come and they'll go from flower to flower and they'll get their pollinaceous reward. But it tends to take a while for the plant to begin developing female flowers, especially if the plant is stressed, if it's being grown in flat earth, doesn't have good drainage, chemical fertilizers, didn't have a good early life. But when it happens, you will notice if you start to look at the flowers, male flowers leave the plant in a straight line. Female flowers have a little bulge underneath them, and that, of course, bulge is what's going to become the fruit. So in one sense, you want to be patient. But then your zucchini was attacked by the squash vine borer, which is a night-flying moth that comes into your garden, lays its eggs at the base of your squash plants. The eggs hatch, little baby caterpillars come out, and they bore, B-O-R-E, into the vine. You know, the vines are hollow. So once they're inside, they're hidden from view, they're protected, and then they eat away like mad. Now, did you buy zucchini plants at a garden center? Did you plant seed? Did you start them yourself?
I did buy them from a garden center, Mike.
Okay. Did you rush the season putting them out? Did you put them out before, like, May 15th or anything?
No, I actually got a late start on my garden last year, so I'm going to say they lay in the ground around June.
Okay, good, good.
Mid-June.
Okay, which also made it seem like it was taking much longer for you. So this year you got two choices. When you get your plants, you get some gauze. The ideal material would be row cover, what I use to cover my lettuce and spinach in the winter. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to do that. Mm-hmm. You can just use the gauze that you would use to wrap up a bad cut on your finger. Right above the roots, don't wrap the roots, but right above where the roots end, you wrap this gauze very lightly, and you're not going to tape it or anything, and then you wrap it up to the first. You might even want to pull off the first couple of leaves and wrap it up high, and then plant it so the like half the gauze is underground and the other half is above ground. That's enough of a physical barrier to prevent them. And now that you know what the deal is, if you want to just physically prevent it, once a week, early in the morning, go out with a squirt bottle that you can set to a sharp stream and just spray that area where the vine comes up out of the ground all around 360. And that way you'll blow the eggs off before they can hatch. Also, if you screw up six times sideways, you'll see a little hole down there eventually when you go to spray. And, you know, if you get that while it's still small, you just get a single-edged razor blade, you go inside, you take out the caterpillar. What you do with it then is between you and your God. And then you heap soil up over the damaged part of the vine. If you get them early, you should be fine.
Right. Wonderful. That is great information, Mike, because I was at wit's end, and I wasn't sure what direction I was going to take here because I was watching these beautiful plants just fall by the wayside, and I was hoping I could do something about it. And I'm new to your show, and you are Mike, you are my new garden guru. That is
All right, Fred. Well, if I can give you more instruction, I would urge you to grow in raised beds, feed the plants compost so that they put those female flowers out as early as possible. But these little tricks will save you from the vine borer, which is a very common pest in Jersey.
That is outstanding, Mike, and I thank you for your time.
All right. Good luck, Fredsky.
All right, thank you.
1-888-346-9499. Jonathan, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Oh, thank you.
Well, thank you, Jonathan. How are you, sir?
I'm just fine. How are you?
I am just ducky. Thanks for asking. Where is Jonathan fine?
In West Philadelphia.
Oh, okay. University City, out by the University of Pennsylvania.
That is correct, right on Spruce Street.
Okay, what a nice area out there. What can we do for Jonathan in University City?
Well, in that little apartment that I'm living in, there's a tiny little backyard that's got just enough room for a garden. And some previous housemates of mine had a garden back there. They were growing some kale and some mustard greens, and then it sort of went unused for about a year. And I was thinking of replanting it, but I've never actually started my own garden before. So I was wondering, for a beginning gardener who's maybe starting to plant possibly a little bit late in the season, what are some of the best starter crops that I can grow there?
No, your timing's fine. Most people rush the season. Now, did your friends build any kind of raised beds or growing boxes?
No, there's just a little, like, 12 by 12 square plot that's bricked off.
Right.
And they brought in some new soil, and we actually mixed in some compost with it just yesterday.
Oh, okay. All right, well, you're doing all the right things. Now, did anybody ever test the soil for lead?
I don't know.
And that's probably a no. You know,
when
I was a stupid college kid, I didn't test anything for anything. So a word to the wise. In these urban environments, soil is often contaminated with lead from old lead paint and the gasoline, the leaded gasoline that was in cars. So the danger is in working with the soil.
Okay.
It's not so much in, you know, the lead has to be pretty high before plants can take it up and make you stupid. But if you inhale enough of the dust, you can get stupid real fast.
Okay.
That's really the only symptom of lead poisoning is you just wind up not being as smart as you should be. So there should be some good resources on the university. There is a great horticultural facility right there near the where the college meets the hospital. You know, the greenhouses there by the bio pond?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a horticultural center in there. So contact them, and they can help you get the soil tested. And then depending on what you find, so you say it is bricked off, but it's flat ground?
Yes.
You know, the smartest thing to do would be to get another layer of bricks and then just fill up that extra space with really clean topsoil and compost. You know, make it a raised bed and don't work in the existing soil. That's your biggest safety. And, you know, you're in an area with a lot of feral cats, so you have to wear gloves.
Yep.
And the best gloves for your situation are baseball batting gloves.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Go to any home store, go to any sporting goods store, any of the big department stores, go to the section where they sell bats and balls and helmets, and you'll see a huge selection of baseball batting gloves, which are leather, come in about 8 different sizes, so you can try them on until you get them that fit like just like an extension of your hand. And you look really cool. You can step out of the box and you can Velcro them on and off and stare down the plants, but they're great hand protection. And again, because you're in an urban area, you should always assume the soil is contaminated with with cats and with lead. And once you build it up, once you make that bed really raised, you can just go to garden centers. You can get kale plants now. You can get lettuce plants. How much sun does the area get?
It's about half in the sun and then half once the paper mulberries start to leaf around there. It's going to be half in the shade.
Okay. But it's full sun now?
Yes.
When it gets, quote, half in the shade, when does the shade hit, early or late in the day?
It will be, I guess, about midday. Yeah.
But it gets sun in the morning?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. If you just want to grow things that you talked about, like kale and salad greens and things like that, when the shade comes rolling in as the plants leaf out, that's going to extend the life of those greens. Because it sounds like they'll get enough sun to be healthy and nutritious, but it also sounds like they'll get the afternoon shade that will prevent them from bolting. Now, when we get to the heat of the summer, they're going to bolt. In other words, they're going to get bitter tasting, and they're going to send up a central flower stalk. If you don't intend to plant anything different right away, if this is your garden, you just want the kale and the greens and stuff, just let them go. Don't pull the plants out, because you will get this giant stalk growing up out of them. And at the top of the stalk, you'll get all these beautiful little flowers. And then by the time the weather starts cooling down, say mid-August, now you have warm soil. So you can sow seed. You don't have to go out and buy plants. Where you are in the city, those plants will survive without any protection until at least Christmas.
Oh, wow.
And if you get really hip plants and you like your variety, if you allow those flowers to dry and develop seed pods, you can shake those seeds onto your soil, cover them with a little bit of soil, and you can self-sow your bed over and over again.
Excellent.
All right, Jonathan, but main thing, be careful. Watch out for lead. Watch out for cats.
Gotcha. Thank you so much.
All right. Good luck, sir.
Thanks. Have a good one.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will appear at the Smithville Earth Fair in historic Smithville, New Jersey, on Sunday, June 14th. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with bad news about old landscape timbers and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, makers of Biotone Starter Plus for new transplants, full of beneficial microbes and mycorrhiza for deeper roots and stronger plants. Espoma, a natural in the garden since 1929. And MoleZap and AntZap. The onset of spring also means the return of pests. MoleZap and AntZap's OMRI-listed organic, child, and pet-safe solutions are designed to leave no runoff or chemical residue. More at AntZap.com and MoleZap.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In a little bit, we will get to the question of the week, addressing the issue of old landscape timbers and what should be in them, and a certain type of timber that should never have been in your landscape to begin with. It's all coming up after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by Burpee, celebrating their 139th year of providing treasured heirloom varieties, hardworking hybrids, fruits of all kinds, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. Information at burpee.com and MoleZap and AntZap. The onset of spring also means the return of pests. MoleZap and AntZap's OMRI-listed organic, child, and pet-safe solutions are designed to leave no runoff or chemical residue. More at AntZap.com and MoleZap.com.
1-888-346-9499. Rose, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Rose. How are you?
I'm good.
And where is Rose Good?
I am in Haddon Township, New Jersey.
Okay, not far from the Philadelphia area. What can we do for Rose in the Garden State?
My property is small. I have two little patches of grass in front of my house that's like postage stamp size, and it's pretty raggy looking. And in the winter, there's a moisture problem. I get a lot of standing water, which turns to ice, and there's a couple low areas and high ones. So I was on an airplane recently, and I saw zoysia grass advertised. So at this point, I'm pretty convinced that that's what I want to do, and there is a place in Mickleton where I could go and get the grass. And he said, I need such a small amount, they could probably put it in my trunk, and I just get somebody to put it in with the plugs. So I was wondering what your thoughts are on zoysia grass.
Zoysia grass is very tough. It is installed by plugs because it spreads sideways very rapidly in the warm weather. Now, you realize that in New Jersey, it's going to be brown and tan 6 to 7 months of the year.
Yes.
But there's no grass that I know of that can take a lot of standing water. Is there a drainage issue? You don't have the water in the spring when typically water pools up?
It's more of an icy problem in the winter because there's low spots and high spots in the lawn itself.
Oh,
it's
okay.
It's not pitched properly.
What I would suggest, because this is such a small area, see if you can just buy the sod instead of cutting the little plugs out, which is typical. Why don't you see if you can just buy enough rolls of sod to do the whole thing?
Oh, I didn't know you could buy it as sod.
Yeah, that's what they're going to cut the plugs out of.
Oh, okay.
My understanding is when you get it mail order even, it is a roll of sod with half-perforated plugs for you to finish cutting out. But no, if they've got zoysia grass, they've got it in sod form. Because the best way to install a new lawn is to get rid of what you have. And then you have to level out the area to below the grade that it is now. Because the sod has a height of its own and it's got a couple of inches of soil on the bottom.
Right.
So you would excavate the area. And it sounds like you can hire somebody to do this in a couple of hours if it's that small an area. And then what they would do is they would make sure everything was level, and they would use a tiller or a garden fork to really break up the soil down at the bottom and improve the drainage. And then if you still want to do the plugs, then you just level everything out and you put the plugs in. Or if you've got the sod, you leave the soil area low enough to accept the sod so that now the bottom of the grass is at the height of your walkway around it, of your driveway, of your sidewalk, of whatever's there.
Okay.
If you go to our website, go to youbetyourgarden.org and go to Garden Answers A to Z, under the letter S, there's an article about installing sod. And whether you're going to do the plugs or sod itself, what you should do is tear up that area, improve the drainage a little bit. And then, you know, again, the zoysia grass is very low maintenance, really doesn't need to be fed. You only have to cut it a couple times a year, but it will be brown and dormant over the winter. It is an amazingly strong grass.
Okay. I spoke to the man down there that sells it, and he said that you should not use the clippings, though, for mulch because they wouldn't deteriorate or something to that effect. Did you ever hear that?
Absolute nonsense. We had a zoysia grass lawn when I was a child, and it can develop thatch because it's such an aggressive grower, but they make special rakes that you rake out all this wonderful material, and it makes great mulch and compost.
Oh, okay.
Just the opposite. It doesn't harm other plants. It's great. As a matter of fact, it keeps making its own mulch.
Oh, that sounds amazing. I think I'll give it a try.
All right. Good luck, Rose.
And thank you so much.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Bob, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello, Mike.
Hello, Bob. How are you, sir?
Okay, I'm doing fine today. How are you?
I am just ducky, Bob. And where are you?
I'm calling from Wallingford, PA, Delaware County.
Right, just outside of Philadelphia. Very good. What can we do for Bob in Wallingford?
Well, I'm finally putting in raised beds for my vegetable garden.
Right.
I inherited from the former owner a nice fenced-in area, so I have protection from critters, which is nice, but I do not have protection from tree roots. About 20 to 25 feet north of this on a neighbor's property, just over the fence, are a couple of Norway maples that are at least 30 years old. And I've had roots coming through into my vegetable garden in the past. When I was looking up raised beds on the internet, I saw somewhere where someone uses sheets of HDPE, high-density polyethylene, and they dig a trench outside of their raised beds, put in a couple sheets of this stuff, and then bury it.
Oh, you're talking about rhizome barrier. The kind
this guy does it the cheap way. He says he can go to a feed store and get the things they use for shrink-wrapping pallets. And that's high-density polyethylene. So you think I should get a different product?
Yeah, I mean, that's not going to work. You're going to do an awful lot of work, and you're not going to get any benefit from it. Do you think that stuff is going to stop a maple root?
That's why I'm calling you.
Yeah. First of all, if you build the beds high enough and you put protection on top of the flat soil, the roots should really stay underground. Are you getting surface roots in your yard?
No. Back when I was a flatlander, I would turn over every fall and 6-8 inches down. You know, I had some that were as fat as my thumb that were 6 feet long into the garden bed.
Yeah, but you're not going to be growing down in that lousy clay soil.
Not
anymore.
With a raised bed, no.
We're going to be building raised beds on top that are no wider than 4 feet, so you never have to till them again. You're going to make sure you have a 2-foot wide walking lanes between them because you're going to need it.
I've got it all mapped out. I have 2.5 feet around everything, and I can have 2 3-foot by 9-foot beds.
Okay, good.
Everything I need except the soil.
Right, and for that I recommend a mix of screened black topsoil compost and a couple bags of perlite mixed in.
So you don't think I need any kind of barrier?
Well, you have two options.
Okay.
You can either dig a trench and install a real barrier, which would be like sheet metal or the specialized rhizome barrier that they use to try to keep running bamboo.
That's a bamboo barrier, okay.
Right, from crossing over into neighbor's yard. Mm-hmm. Saran wrap is not going to do it, Bob. Or what I typically recommend is when you're installing raised beds, you know, you level out the surface, and then you put single sheets of cardboard over top of the entire area, install your beds on top of that, fill the beds with the soil and on the lanes in between. That's a great place to use wood chips or shredded bark. If you're really worried about the tree roots somehow smelling your vegetables, turning sideways and coming towards the sun, you could use 2 layers of cardboard. You could use some thicker material. But there's lots of, now that you mention it, there's lots of trees on the outskirts of where I grow my vegetables. And sometimes if I'm going to double dig a raised bed, I may see some little roots down there. But they've never come up into the soil or done anything to interfere with my vegetables. So I think, you know, unless they're causing damage, you know, maple roots can get into water lines, into sewer lines, and they can be very damaging. But right. If you're not worried about that, I would just lay that heavy cardboard, the heaviest cardboard you can find. Like, you know, go to a home store and get the cardboard that they ship washing machines and refrigerators in.
Okay.
Lay that down over top of everything. Build your raised beds nice and high on top of that. I don't think you're going to have any problems, just success.
Fantastic. Terrific.
All right,
thanks,
Bob.
Save me some money.
That's what I'm here for. All right, good luck, sir.
Thank you.
Bye. All right, it's time for the question of the week, in which we look at suspect wood and learn that railroad ties are not legal for home landscape use. Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden, read the email that got this investigation underway.
Happy to, Mike. Patty writes, I recently bought a house just over the Pennsylvania border in Maryland. The previous owner had many garden beds, and the one he used for vegetables had old timbers surrounding it that looked questionable. I asked him if they were treated wood, and he said he didn't know and that they were there when he purchased the house over 10 years ago. The timbers are rotted and in bad shape. How do I find out whether they are treated wood? And if they are, do I need to remove all the soil? Is there a place I could take a piece of wood to show someone or have it analyzed? Thank you so much.
Well, Patty attached photos that show badly rotted timbers, some with a telltale green color, which might be mold, but more likely it's a sign that the wood was treated with arsenic or other toxic wood preservative.
What should she do?
Well, I went to the EPA to see what kind of advice they have for people who have the worst kind of wood on their property, old railroad ties. And what I discovered was shocking.
You don't shock very easily.
Every EPA site said the same thing about the main preservative used in old railroad ties. Quote, creosote is a possible human carcinogen and has no registered residential use.
What? So it's actually illegal to use old railroad ties in a home landscape?
Again, I quote the EPA. Creosote is not approved to treat wood for residential use, including landscape timbers and garden borders. There are no approved residential uses of creosote-treated wood. The agency is aware that creosote-treated railroad ties are being used in the residential setting for landscape purposes and as borders around gardens. Such uses in residential settings are not intended uses. If you have creosote-treated wood in your yard, consult the handling precautions outlined in this document.
But, Mike, I think I've seen old railroad ties for sale recently.
You probably have. I found one online seller who's current and who specializes in them. Quote, used railroad ties are great for retaining walls and other applications around the house.
Oh, that can't be legal.
Well, since it's an unapproved use of a registered pesticide, it isn't. But it doesn't look like there's any kind of enforcement going on. I even found actual old railroad ties for sale this month at the website of one of the big box home center chains. So, people, if you see old railroad ties for sale, report the seller to the EPA and warn your friends not to buy them.
And what about people like Connie who inherit them?
Well, she can have the wood and her soil tested for arsenic, creosote, chromium, and the other common wood preservatives. But the odds are so strong that it is toxic based on the age of those timbers that I would just cut to the chase and spend the money on safe removal, following the EPA guidelines for old railroad ties, which are, don't touch the wood with bare skin. Don't let animals or children near it. Don't let it get near a water supply. Don't inhale the dust. Wear protective equipment when you handle it, including gloves that are, quote, chemically impervious. And don't burn it. The fumes can be deadly.
Would you really feel comfortable doing the removal work yourself?
Maybe, but the cost of buying the right kind of protective gear alone would probably be the same as paying professionals to do it. I would get bids from several local companies that do asbestos removal. They already have the expertise, the right protective equipment, and access to safe disposal options. Have them remove all the rotting wood and about the top inch of soil. Then the homeowner or a landscaper, as long as they're wearing long sleeves, protective gloves, and a heavy-duty dust mask, can have soil brought in to level the area, lay cardboard over the leveled soil, frame out raised beds, drop them on top of the cardboard, and fill them with topsoil, compost, and perlite. Use non-dyed wood chips or bark mulch to cover the 2-foot-wide walking lanes between the beds.
Well, then you'd be growing in clean soil for sure.
And there wouldn't be a lot of contaminated soil or sawdust for people to inhale or otherwise come into contact with. As we've stressed in the past, the big danger here comes from inhaling the toxins or absorbing them through your skin. So, quote, just growing ornamentals there really isn't a safe option. Do it right, and you'll also get highly productive garden beds out of the deal.
Now, Mike, you often tell new gardeners to just build a few raised beds a season. Could people in this situation take the same go-slow approach?
Yes and no. They can take their time building these new beds, but I'd want all of that old wood and that top inch of soil out of there right away. Otherwise, they're in danger of inhaling toxins every day. And if they were to try to work in that soil without protection, they'd risk ingesting the chemicals through inhalation and skin contact, and even worse, getting a toxic splinter. No matter what kind of wood treatment was used, their splinters are nasty. Well, that sure was some depressing but real-world advice about old wood, now wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to railroad my ties if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499. Or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore with your location at garden@whyy.org. And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you'll find answers to all your garden questions, audio of this show and past shows, and our increasingly, pleasingly popular podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Al Banks. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work and like us at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Rich Banowitz keeps our website up and running, assisted by the unpronounceable Jessica Kay, also known as the new Sarah. The same old Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Old in the tooth is our editor, Al Banks. Fabulous Farah Al-Yakoud is under the weather. Olivia the Tattooed Lady picks her up and fields her phone calls. With a fielding percentage well over 700, 950 if I lose the glove, I'm hard-charging Mike McGrath, and I'm making the throw to home for the force so I can see you next week. That's if the force is with me, and if the force is with you, and hey, those aren't the droids you're looking for. No, no, not them. No, no, the ones you're looking for over there. Really, honest. Take my word for it. Really. Have you ever had to wash your hair to get your fingernails clean? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll do a Jeff Foxworthy and ask 50 quick questions that will reveal if you really are a gardener. Plus your fabulous phone calls.